Inside the Cross Podcast.
Welcome to the latest Inside the Cross Podcast. This week I talk with Dan Ebern and Josh Davey about the 2016 recruiting issue, focusing on this year's incoming freshmen. Then, I get on the phone with Hallie Quillen, IL Women's Editor, to talk number one recruit and cover star Kerrigan Miller, bound for USC. Enjoy the podcast. Be sure to follow me on Twitter, at Matt Kinnear, and also subscribe to us on iTunes, Inside the Cross. Inside the Cross, Matt Kinnear here. We are talking recruiting. The 2016 recruiting issue is out the door. It is on newsstands. It is available digitally. You can see it all on insidethecross.com. And it's one of the most exciting times of the year for us. It's a big project that is really fulfilling and kind of one of the marquee cornerstones of what Inside the Cross does. I'm here with Dan Ebern, who put together, kind of took the lead on putting together all the lists and all the content for the recruiting issue, and events coordinator Josh Davey, who's been a key part of Inside the Cross's events this summer and has been around a number of events throughout the summer circuit and has seen a bunch of these kids playing. So we're going to talk a little bit about the incoming freshmen. You know, we rank freshmen, the incoming seniors in high school, juniors, and sophomores in the issue across boys and girls. But it starts with what the kind of incoming freshmen as we enter this fall ball season. These guys are going to be seeing time on the field. Dan, we have Jeff Teat, Cornell-bound attackman, as the number one player in the country. He overtook Docs Aitken's spot for the number one ranking by Inside the Cross. Dan, what do you see from Jeff Teat?
I mean, first of all, I do want to mention that Jeff Teat being number one this year was a huge coup, I think, you know, for me and the other guy who put together this list, in Jeff Shannon. Docs, you know, for a few years was our number one player, but when we saw Jeff Teat, you know, perform at the Hill Academy this year, and for Team Canada this past summer, we were just like, wow, this kid is the real deal. And that's what Jeff Teat is. He's just one of those players where it just seems that, like, every other player's skill is amplified when he's on the field and when he has the ball. And he's just going to be a supreme playmaker for Cornell. It really does feel a little bit like, you know, the second coming of Rob Pinnell, but maybe the Canadian version of Rob Pinnell. But, and that's a very big expectation to put upon this kid, but I think he has the scoring acumen, you know, the playmaking ability to make that happen.
Yeah, it's interesting with Teat. You know, he was left off for some unknown reason, left off the all-world team at the U19 games, which is kind of mind-boggling to me because I thought he was the best player for Canada. If Canada wins the gold medal, I'm sure that's a different story and he's on that team, but, you know, that's kind of a discussion for another day. Stephen Stamp did the story on Jeff Teat in the issue for Inside the Cross magazine. And what really struck me is, you know, he asked Coach Kerwick, you know, who do you compare this kid to? And Coach Kerwick couldn't even use a lacrosse analogy. He said, the closest thing that I can compare this kid to is Wayne Gretzky, you know, the great one. That's some pretty high praise. And really, he kind of plays like him. Like you said, he makes everyone around him better. He's one of those guys who just seems like he's a step ahead. It looks a little bit effortless for him. You know, sometimes I think those players don't get the recognition they deserve because it doesn't look like they're trying overly hard, but yeah. He's just, you know, kind of so fluid and effortless. He just makes everyone better, and that's really what Cornell needs. They need that guy who's going to be the focal point of their offense to elevate a team that, you know, has kind of had a disappointing few seasons or a disappointing last season.
Yeah, and just to put an emphasis on how, you know, he just raises the skill of everybody, he was one of the players, one of two Canadian players to play in this year's Under Armour All-American game. He was on the field for 10 seconds, and he scored. You know, he literally walked out of the box, took a pass down the alley, shot it, and scored. That's how incredible I think this kid is.
Yeah, and there's, you know, kind of the decision to make Jeff Teat number one. You know, there's so many factors that go into these decisions. You know, there's we see so many games, you know, from high school to the Under Armour games to all the marquee events throughout the summer to the Committed Academy, you know, to a number of things that really go into this decision. We talk to a number of coaches, whether they be at the club, high school level, or the college level. The thing about Jeff Teat that really struck me is his ability, both field and box, to compete at the highest level. He had a great senior season with the Hill Academy, and that was really just the start of his year. You know, when you look at the Under Armour performance, you look at the Under-19 performance, And then his junior performance is just, it was one for the ages. He broke John Grant Jr.'s scoring record, which, I mean, if you're comparing this kid to John Grant Jr. and Wayne Gretzky, there's got to be something, you know, pretty remarkable about him. That doesn't take away anything from Docs Aiken. I think there's just a few more question marks about his game translating to the next level. But, you know, Jeff Teat, he's the first Canadian to ever be the number one recruit in Inside the Cross's Power 100 list. Just a number of superlatives about this kid that I'm really excited to see him play. You know, luckily for a lot of lacrosse fans, you know, in the Mid-Atlantic, Cornell is going to be at an event at Georgetown Prep in October 9th. So, you know, you'll kind of get to see him play there. How much time he gets as a freshman, you know, our reader, Dan Boyer, kind of pointed out to me that, you know, even Paul and Gary Gate had limited time as a freshman. Obviously, they were going into a much different situation at Syracuse than Jeff is going at Cornell. I'm really interested to see how he hits the ground running. But, you know, Docs Aiken is another, you know, marquee talent and another guy who's going to make an impact at the next level. Dan and Josh, you have seen this kid play. You know, he was the number one recruit for 3 years in our rankings. You know, what do you think of Docs' game?
I think he can really do it all. You know, unfortunately, Haverford had somewhat of an underwhelming season this year, whereas, you know, we got to see Jeff Teat play a lot as he, you know, with Hill Academy hit this Baltimore circuit during the spring. But, you know, going back to the year before, and, you know, he's just a pretty all-around player. You know, he has a very dominant his size. You know, he's a big boy. He can do it all with both hands, and he's just a leader on the field. You know, he might come out and get a run and, you know, get a hockey assist or, you know, make a play, but he's going to draw attention no matter where he is as well, which is going to open up things for everyone. And, you know, with Docs and having Conrad there at Virginia now, you know, they've got two big-time recruits who I think are going to draw a lot of attention. And, you know, with the new coach coming in and a new mm-hmm. offense down in Charlottesville could be, you know, start of something pretty special down there.
Yeah, and to elaborate on Josh's point, you know, Docs, I feel like, you know, for the past, he's been our number one 16 for as long as I can remember. I just think that when we looked at him early on, we said, hey, this kid is like, I think what we look for in the number one recruit is who's the kid who looks most like Paul Rabel, essentially. And I feel like that's what we have in Docs. He's just, you know, one of those kids early on who we said, man, this kid is a special athlete. He can play both ways, and the stick skills are, they're there. They're there. They're incredible. And I think he's got so much potential with Lars Tiffany's system, you know, the ability to play fast. And it'll be interesting to see if he actually gets some freshman minutes. I think he's our number one player, but I don't know if he's the number one player to get the most field time early.
That's a good point. And, you know, kind of in terms of field time, you know, I think the next two guys on the list are two guys who, again, could contribute, you know, pretty quickly at the collegiate level. First is Jared Bernhardt, who is kind of the hero of the U19 game there. What do you see from him moving forward?
I love him as an alley dodger and an alley shooter, and I think he's really that type of midfielder that Maryland has really craved for so many years, a guy who can who's just a pure initiator from the midfield and can score on his own as well. And he had a great, you know, U19 summer. He was one of the leading point scorers on Team USA. And just to show you how much of an athlete he is, he turned down, you know, playing triple option quarterback at Navy in order to play midfield at Maryland. That's pretty incredible. Got any thoughts, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, then just going down, you know, to Ethan Walker, a guy I've seen a couple times, is going to fit really, really nicely into that Denver offense, you know, with an unbelievably creative and crafty stick, you know, just right up Matt Brown's alley over there out in Denver. So I think he is a guy who could come in pretty early and make an impact in DU's offense.
Yeah, in terms of Ethan Walker, I think, you know, for the past couple of years, he's probably the guy that we've said, should this guy be number one? Should he be number one? He always seems to put, you know, huge numbers up at Culver. I think he scored 102 goals this past season for them. And I think he'll fit right in at Denver. I don't see him not starting from day one. I think they've needed a lefty finisher ever since Wes Berg left, and I think he's the guy that's going to come right on campus and fill that role.
You know, it's funny with this recruiting issue. There's a number of different opinions that go to this, including all of us in the office. I know our publisher, Terry Foy, is really high on Ethan Walker, and I think yes. He even mentioned him, you know, in conversations as maybe being the number one guy in this list. So it really is a kind of a confluence of opinions and perspectives that comes together for this issue. We have disagreements about these things within the office and hash them out to kind of make this Power 100 list. This is our 20th recruiting issue, so we kind of know how to filter out those opinions and kind of create these lists and create this content. Dan, you know, you're writing a few stories about fall ball on InsideLacrosse.com and talking about, you know, which freshmen are kind of going to make an impact right away. That's one of the big things we look for in the fall is how these freshmen fit into these systems, you know, how they look, you know, physically. Are they kind of putting on that college weight? You mentioned Ryan McNulty as the defenseman who's going to Loyola as potentially the highest impact guy going into this season. Why do you think that?
I mean, I just think he's a monster. He's a beast. I think anybody who's seen him play just realizes that this kid is a special player. He's just a next-level player. And it really wasn't even close that he was going to be the top defenseman. Everybody else kind of, like, was way behind him. He's just incredible. I think he's just a force in the middle of the field. He's listed as a D guy, but I think he has potential at LSM. And wouldn't that be incredible? You know, the Loyola Greyhounds having pretty much, like, the consensus top freshman 2 years in a row. Last year we had Patrick Spencer. And if Ryan McNulty comes and turns into a terror in the middle of the field for the Greyhounds, that would be really special.
Yeah, and then, you know, Cole Williams is you know, our number six player there. Hopkins, as we talked about on kind of the Fall Ball Preview podcast, yeah. Hopkins has a number of they certainly have all the talent in the world, but they have a number of question marks, how those pieces are going to fit together. Cole Williams is one of those guys who there's a slot that he could kind of fill it for that Hopkins offense. Josh, you know, what do you know about Cole and kind of what do you see from him?
I think the one thing, you know, when you look at him and you're at these events and you see, you know, wherever Cole is, he gets bigger every time you see him. He is an unbelievable presence on the field. I mean, I don't know his exact numbers, you know, right in front of me, but he's got to be 6'4". He's unbelievably tall. He's got long arms, you know, long legs. He's definitely got a Baltimore kind of style and swagger about him, you know, playing down here and with the Dons. But he just does it all. You know, he's a lefty. He's a presence on the field, like I said. He's always got his head up looking to make a play. We got to see him a few times this summer, last summer playing with the Loonies at the ILRI events as well as the Epic Committed Academy this summer, you know, playing for the Big Ten squad coached by Steve Berger. He's just a presence, and he's one of those guys who, no matter where you are on the field, you're gonna, you know, you gotta know where he is, and, you know, he's a guy that I think is gonna fit in nicely with a couple other young pieces returning, and some guys that have been there for a year or two now at Hopkins, and it could be definitely a special year if Coach Petromala and Coach Benson can put some of these pieces together, you know, in the right way.
Yeah, I gotta give a shout out to Cole Williams. I don't think there's any player in our top 100 who made a bigger jump from junior year to senior year. I mean, I remember watching him kind of early on in his high school career. He looked as if he was like a kid, maybe a little uncomfortable in how fast his body was growing and how fast his body was changing. And what I saw from him this senior year was a kid who knew how to use it, who was very comfortable, you know, moving his body. He had put on a lot of weight. When I saw him at the MIAA semifinals, I said, wow, this kid probably could play basketball. He's just that big. He's just that muscular. He's just that athletic. He's a monster. And I think, you know, he really is the wild card, I think, going into the fall for Johns Hopkins. They've got that hole at left attack, and I think he could be one of those guys that could fill it.
Switching gears a little bit, going a little bit down the list to the number one overall goalie that we have. It's Jack Pizzola, who's going to North Carolina. And Jeff Shannon wrote a little story about him in the recruiting issue. It talks about how he grabbed that starting nod for Boys Latin and really has played under the lights, played in the big pressure situations. You know, he's obviously going to North Carolina where he can contribute and, you know, they're the national champions. So you don't really get any, you know, brighter lights than that.
Yeah.
And Jeff talked a lot about how, you know, Boys Latin, you know, they switch from, you know, between zone and man to man and kind of switch their defense around with Jack as the goalie there. And it was just remarkable how he's able to adapt to that. You know, I think the top three goalies that we have listed, I think you could pick any one of the three as the number one goalie in this class, you know, between Phil Goss and Matt Trowbridge. But I think that's kind of the thing that separated Pizzola here is just his adaptability and his ability to change with, you know, whatever system he's going to go into. And that's something that's going to be really key in college because it is a much smarter game. It is a much more complex game, and he's proven that he can handle that.
Yeah, and I think we also gave him a little bit of a nod to be number one because of his heart. He really kind of reminded me of Nico Amato a little bit this senior season. There was very few players on that Boys Latin squad who wanted to win more than Jack Pizzola, and if they lost, he took it personally. You know, he said, I could have made that save. I could have, you know, made a better outlet pass that led to a transition goal or something like that. He's a gamer. He has that kind of mentality, and I think that's why he beat out Philip Goss in a very tight, you know, battle for that number one goalie spot. But like you said, he's got great adaptability. You know, Brian Farrell came into Boys Latin this year and realized that playing zone with Pezzullo was going to work in that league. And, you know, they almost beat McDonough in a midseason contest. McDonough ended up running the table in the MIAA, eventually beating Boys Latin in the MIAA championship. But Pezzullo, you know, he was that wild card going into that game. He said, hey, you know, this kid could play on his head and, you know, get the Lakers to a win.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. I remember standing on the field at MIAs, and, you know, the first couple of plays, I was like, oh, my God, that is an unreal save. Like, this kid is a freak. Like,
yeah.
And then another one, and it just became second nature and normal. And it's a guy I'd seen play before, but, you know, under the bright lights, on Homewood Field, you know, unfortunately, they didn't come away with a W, but he shines in those moments, like you said, and stepping onto campus at UNC, who just won a national championship. You know, he can kind of keep those lights bright and kind of slide right in there and, you know, continue to elevate his game down in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, in terms of high-pressure situations, I think he's been through them all with his high school career. I think it'll be really interesting to see whether in the fall if he can really kind of take that spot from Brian Balcom, you know, who made, you know, a championship-winning save in that game against a Maryland player. You know, it'll be interesting to see if he can dethrone him from that spot.
You know, when we look at this, you know, one of the biggest questions, and I think one of the you know, there's all these players that are good, and that's all well and good, you know, who these individuals are, but really how they fit in with the rest of their class, how they fit in with the players who are already there on campus, that's what people want to know about. They don't want to know necessarily who was great in high school. You know, they want to know, what does it mean for my team? And if you're a Duke Blue Devil fan right now, I mean, you're pretty used to success in kind of this recent run of lacrosse history, but you have to be pretty excited about what you're bringing in with this number one incoming recruiting class, led by Joey Manown. You know, I would say is kind of the guy who really is the centerpiece of this class, but it really is just incredibly deep. And we saw, you know, five of these guys at the Inside the Cross Epic Committed Academy, and they really just kind of jumped off the field at you. JT Giles Harris is a defender that I'm really, really excited about seeing on the next level. I got to meet him for a photo shoot a few months back for our summer recruiting preview issue. And he's, you know, he looks big on the field, but when you kind of stand next to him in person, it's, you can't help but just feel like a small, minuscule person.
Yeah.
He's a big guy, and he just plays quick and plays fantastic. You know, we talked about Joey Manown, Josh and Dan, the Committed Academy. We got to see a lot of these guys up close. What did you see from the Blue Devils?
I mean, first of all, it's a very midfield heavy class, and I also feel it's a very crucial class for Duke. You know, they lose Miles Jones, they lose Deemer Class, two great midfielders, but they bring in a whole haul of some of the best middies in the class. Joey Manown, you know, he's been on our radar for a long time, and incredibly crafty player. I think that if there's any one guy who could challenge for a starting role right away, it'd be him. He was awesome at Committed Academy. JT Giles Harris, you never know with Coach Janowski. He could give that kid a short stick and put him at defensive midfield. He can make him play LSM. He can make him play close. Brian Smythe, excellent faceoff guy. Riley Walsh, Kevin Quigley, Terry Lindsay, you know, the who's who of midfielders in this class. And also Walker Scaglione had a great Committed Academy. He definitely kind of, I think, pushed himself up and onto our radar a little bit.
I think what was cool, you know, one of my favorite things about the, you know, the Committed Academy this summer was, like, you know, you alluded to, Matt, is some of those relationships being built already. And, you know, we did have a handful of future Blue Devils there. And I think that, you know, being there in the, you know, the media studio, watching these guys kind of walk around and have some time to catch some AC, you know, during a hot summer and kind of, you know, do their thing and, you know, be boys and kind of hang out and chirp and do what they do. You could see how close, you know, just over the weekend, by, you know, from when they stepped onto Goucher on Friday to Sunday afternoon, that you could tell those guys were, you know, very comfortable with one another, not only on the field, but, you know, off the field. They were sitting next to each other and everything they were doing. They were walking to breakfast together, doing things like that. So, you know, that's where I, you know, pretty pumped about the Committed Academy moving forward. But those Duke guys, I think, took full advantage of it, and I think it'll, you know, pay dividends for them once they step on campus.
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, you look at these top 20 classes, the top four are ACC classes. All those players got to play, you know, all the players who came to the Committed Academy got to play together. at that event for the Coastals team. So, you know, those guys kind of have a head up already. You know, when they get to college, you know, they're playing not only with their future classmates, but some of the best players in the country, you know, in terms of like, if you're a Duke player and you're playing side by side, you know, with a player who's a highly ranked guy going to Virginia or North Carolina, Notre Dame, that's really got to help you at the next level. But when we look at these top 20 classes, you know, I wanted to focus a little bit on the Ivy League. You know, there's two incoming classes that I'm really impressed with, and that is the Brown Bears and the Yale Bulldogs.
Yeah,
we have Yale as the number 11 incoming class and Brown as number 10. I really see those players on those classes making an impact.
Yeah, I love Brown's class this year, and it really feels like they've brought in the type of players that will naturally fill in to what they lost last year. They bring in Phil Goss, who I think if any freshman is going to start at goalie for the Brown Bears, it'll be him. Ryan Finley, great defenseman. Luke McKillop, pretty solid attackman. And Levi McCrady, a great middie who's been, you know, a fixture at many inside lacrosse events for a couple of summers now. And then Michael Brown, I think, was a guy who really shot up on our radar this year. We saw him. We said, oh, my God, it's Larkin Kemp. It's Alec Tullett. He's that next LSM who's going to get it done in the middle of the field. For new coach Mike Daly.
Jump just, you know, real quick, looking to Yale right behind Brown. And, you know, in these recruiting classes, you have Jackson Morrill and Lucas Kotler, two guys, not to keep going back to the Community Academy, but who were there and on a short team in terms of numbers, coached by Chaz Woodson, were two guys who stood out, I think, immediately to pretty much everyone on our staff. You know, we see a lot of Jackson Morrill playing to McDonough down here in Baltimore all the time, but he's just one of the most confident, smooth, calm players. You know, he's the quarterback of the offense, and I think he'll fit in really nicely up at Yale. And Lucas Kotler is just a do-it-all middie. He's a grinder. And, you know, anything you ask him to do, he's going to do. And it was just a great person to, you know, meet also down there down here in Baltimore for the Community Academy. So I'm looking forward to seeing how both of those guys transfer into Yale with a couple other nice pieces headed that way as well.
Yeah, Jackson Morrow at the Community Academy, like, he put up some ungodly kind of numbers. Like, I think he had, like, 23 goals or something the whole tournament. And Lucas Kotler was right there with him. I really thought, you know, on that Ivy League team that the Yale guys were the go-to guys, whether it be scorers or initiators. So I think if you're Coach Andy Shea, you got to be really excited. I think if any of those kids, I think Kotler probably has the likely, you know, chance to start at right away as a freshman. I think Jackson Morrow looks like the heir apparent to the Ben Reeves role on attack. You know, a kid who can take behind the cage and initiate everything from there.
Yeah, the thing that really impressed me is Well, Lucas Kotler, he's just a completely impressive kid. And the Yale's class really just has stood out to me, you know, kind of over these summer events. The thing that I really love about them is you can just imagine every player that's in that class in Yale's system. Yeah. You can just imagine them in a Yale uniform. It doesn't seem like they're going outside of their philosophy in the kids that they're recruiting. Andy Shea has just done a remarkable job of getting the kids that kind of fit in with his style, getting the kids that he wants, and, you know, whether they're number one recruits or number 100 recruits or number 200 recruits, you know, wherever they are on the list, you can just tell right away that these are Yale Bulldogs just from the way that they play. And that's really paid dividends and made them, you know, arguably the most consistent team in the Ivy League in the recent history. We talked about new coaches and you know, just the coaching carousel on this offseason. And Princeton is obviously the storied program that, you know, has a lot of attention on it. They got a pretty good class coming in here. Dan, you know, they're ranked number 16 in our rankings. You know, they got a number of top 50 players, a few top 10 guys, or at least one top 10 guy, Michael Sowers. How is this kind of class going to come in for the Tigers and contribute?
Well, like you said, they've got two great players coming in that I really could see starting, you know, from day one and, you know, going all the way, being four-year starters. Michael Sowers, 144 assists his senior year. I saw that stat, and I think I fell out of my chair. He was also a absolutely huge player for Team USA this past summer, one of our crucial, you know, point scorers for Team USA. And then Armand Medgalshi, you know, we have a lot of difficulty pronouncing his name sometimes, but I think I got it down. He's just a fantastic defenseman, plays a big game. You know, McDonough played one of the toughest schedules in the nation this year, and he was on every other, you know, opponent's top offensive player. And he took him to school almost every time. You know, he's just a fighter when it comes to ground balls. He's great, you know, being on players' hands. And I think he's really a transformational, you know, kind of defensive player for them. And I think if you're Matt Madelon, you got to feel like you're in good hands with the type of players that you're bringing in this season.
You know, you guys both were at many more events than I was, you know, over the summer. Any kind of trends that you're seeing, you know, with these 2016 players, you know, or even if you want to expand it a little bit outside that, this summer, kind of just what did you see overall in the recruiting landscape?
I mean, go ahead, Dan. Go ahead.
I think one thing for me is that you see a lot more diversity in where kids are going. I think the Big Ten has made a lot of strides in recruiting. They're, you know, places like Michigan and Ohio State are getting kids who would otherwise be going, you know, to the ACC or to, you know, Maryland and Hopkins. And another thing is I think a lot of kids are kind of rejecting the whole trend of early recruiting and saying, I'm not going to go to that big school and, you know, have the possibility of sitting on the bench. I'm going to go to maybe a new program or a middle-of-the-run pack and, you know, really make my mark there. I think that's one thing I've seen over the past few years but really became apparent within, you know, looking at our top 100 and looking also at the 17 and 18s as well.
And I think that, you know, what's also cool is that there are a lot of schools and, you know, it's just part of the nature of the business is if someone's going to do it, then I have to do it. You know, it's a and the recruiting has become, you know, from a parent side and from a, you know, someone who's dealing with a lot of the people playing in our events, it's such a fear-driven industry. You know, it's the most like FOMO, fear of missing out. Is my son is not, you know, getting the looks here. How am I going to get him this look? What do I need to do? Do I need to email this guy? You know, and I think just to that also, you have teams like Duke and Notre Dame who aren't really racking up, you know, 2020 commits at this point, who are still being able to put out, you know, amazing products year after year. So I think to your point, Dan, I think the early recruiting, you know, while it's still a hot topic in our sport, you know, I do think that it'll start to it'll start to decrease and things will come back to be a little more sane from our end and make our jobs a little bit easier. But, you know, I think that's something that's certainly needed. But right now is definitely still kind of the trend that's going on in lacrosse.
And likewise, I feel like, you know, poaching is becoming a lot more commonplace. I feel like we haven't really kept track, but I feel like this was the record year where we had kids, you know, switch commitments, which is, I think, good for them. It empowers the players, it empowers the parents, and what is otherwise, like Josh said, a very fear-driven kind of atmosphere.
You know, I kind of want to focus on maybe if each of us can go through and one or two players who are on this Power 100 list, maybe not a top 10 guy, but just a guy that's somewhere on this list that you really feel like is going to surprise you, who you saw in the summer, who, you know, I think is going to be really good at the next level. And I'll start with Steven Schullenberger, a bullish attackman who's going to Drexel. And Josh, to your point about, you know, both your points about the early recruiting trend and kind of the different, you know, it's such a fear-driven thing of, you know, we're not going to find a spot. There are schools like Drexel that will not watch young players. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten a great talent in Steve Schullenberger, who, you know, was kind of a later commitment in the process going to Bullis, who you know, really is going to be an impact player at Drexel. I firmly believe that. You know, you kind of look at this list right now, and he's ranked where he probably deserves to be. But, you know, he certainly has that potential to be more of an impact immediately kind of guy. And, you know, I like the way that Drexel kind of has the ability to coach up players. And, you know, I think he's going to be one of those guys that we're going to hear his name a lot in the next few seasons. And, you know, he was a late commitment who, you know, Brian Volker has been one of the most outspoken critics of the early recruiting game. Let's call it that. And, you know, he put his money where his mouth is. And, you know, it's really kind of paid dividends for them because their 2016, you know, led by him. But their 2017 class is very good, too. You know, obviously Drexel doesn't support the 2019 class or the 2020 class like some other teams do. But they've really found a way to be successful with these late bloomers and make an impact and get some good kids into their program. So kudos to Volker for kind of doing what you know, not just writing columns and Inside the Cross and kind of going against his own word, but kind of following up on what his philosophy is. And another kid that I wanted to highlight in this list is TD Ireland going to Albany. You know, I think last year Scott Maher had one of the great quotes in all of college lacrosse. I mean, obviously he's a quote machine to begin with, but he said something to one of the Albany newspapers that it's going to be on my tombstone, couldn't find a face-off guy. So I think, you know, kind of how, you know, we alluded to in the fall ball preview podcast about how Alex Woodall transferring to Towson was kind of filling the biggest hole on the, you know, kind of the, on one of those elite programs. TD Ireland could be the guy that kind of finally fills that face-off void for Albany that they've had. It's been frustrating for them. They've dealt with injuries. They've gotten good players who just, for whatever reason, haven't panned out, gotten injured. But I really like this kid. He comes from a program that is used to winning. And talking to him, I think he's just got a good head on his shoulders, and he's a talented face-off specialist. I really think you're going to see him make an impact, and I think he's going to kind of reverse that bad luck that Albany has had at that position.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just looking at this list, looking it up and down, another guy who, you know, I've had the opportunity to see a couple times is Brian Casabile, who I think we have his number. I think he's the number 8 midi, a Mount St. Joe kid, who did play for Team USA this summer as well, who I think could step on the field very quickly at Notre Dame in a defensive midi kind of role. He's a freak athlete, quarterback at the Mount St. Joe football team, who a very competitive football team as well. But just going to be a do-it-all guy. You're kind of stereotypical Notre Dame grinder, midfielder. He's going to be tough as nails. He's going to give you everything he's got every single day of the week. I think is a guy that in 4 years, you know, with some of these D-middies we see now, especially at Notre Dame, who are, you know, we continue to talk about making plays in big situations, could be a guy that is going to put in the time in the weight room. He's going to be out there early doing sprints. He's going to put in the work he needs to do to work hard to get on the field. Is a guy I think that looking down the road, we could be coming back to him and say, wow, that was a great pickup for Notre Dame.
Yeah, and there's so many kids on this list that I look at, and they may not be like the, you know, the highest ranked players, but I'm just so excited to see them play at the next level. I think, you know, the guy who highest on the list for me is Nicky Pekovic, who's a kid I saw play a lot at Bullis this year. Bullis had a great season. They won their first ever DCIC title, kind of breaking the norm in that league. And Nicky Pekovic was just seemingly had a hand in every single big play. He's just a dynamic, you know, kind of like a – he's listed as an attackman, but he really just plays offense. You know, he can invert from the wing, dodge from behind, or just be an alley dodger. He's just a phenomenal offensive player, and I think he's, you know, one of the higher impact players on this list going to Colgate. I think they've been looking for a guy to, you know, fill that Peter Baum kind of role at midfield for a few seasons now, and I really think he's their next great scorer. Another guy I'm really excited to see that we saw a lot, you know, over the summer was Trey LeClaire going to Ohio State, you know, a big, you know, Canadian with a lot of box skill, but a little bit of some high-end athleticism, you know, kind of like Shane Simpson a little bit for the Carolina, you know, fast guy, but also, you know, built like an ox. I really think he's going to fit well into Ohio State's, you know, offensive system where they build upon that, you know, that really good, you know, Canadian finisher that they've, you know, lacked this past season. He's going to remind you of Jesse King. He's going to remind you of Logan Schuss. I think he's going to, you know, get on campus and be an instant contributor for the Buckeyes.
I think one other guy that kind of I like that's maybe going under the radar a little bit is Shane Brennan, a goalie from Walt Whitman going to Towson, was kind of on the border there for making the Under Armour team, you know, this past summer, who stood out very, very much so at Committed Academy. He's a presence in the cage, a big kid. He's just a ball stopper. And going to Towson down here in Baltimore for Coach Nadlin, who had a ton of Towson kids, he got the opportunity to play with at the Committed Academy. I think that he's one of those guys in Towson who's had some good goalies, you know, of late, who by his senior year and I think even before that could be we could be talking about a lot down here in Towson.
See, Josh brought up an excellent point about Towson, and one of the real joys of the Committed Academy, you know, as we mentioned before, was seeing these guys play together. But you know, I think one of the issues that people have had with the Inside of the Cross Power 100 and kind of our recruiting coverage in general is how top heavy it is in terms of ACC and Big Ten and those kind of schools, and justifiably so that it is top heavy because those schools, you know, do get a lot of the best players.
Yep.
But I do think you saw the growth of the sport at the Committed Academy and saw how some of these conferences that, you know, aren't the ACC and the Big Ten, really how much talent there is. And the CAA is the prime example. I already talked about a Drexel player. Josh was just talking about a number of Towson players. And then you look at a team like Fairfield that has two players on this list, including Matt Federaca, who is the son of Bucknell coach Frank Federaca. They're going to be a really, really, you know, good incoming class for Fairfield. And, you know, they have some great 2017s after them. When we were at the Committed Academy, the MAC did really, really well. You know, I think you saw a lot of those players, a lot of those Detroit commits, you know, a lot of Quinnipiac and Marist commits really were impressive. So the gap between number one and, say, number 200 is surprisingly thin, and I think you're going to start to see that narrow a little bit. But kind of when we're talking, you know, through this list, you know, I mentioned those Fairfield guys, but another guy, and I kind of want to shed a little bit of light into the process, is Austin Statz, who is going to Onondaga Community College. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, the way the deadlines work, you know, we're sitting at September 14th here. We've had these lists in near complete status for more than a month at this point, but, you know, continue to make little tweaks to it before we go to press. We went to press about 10 days ago here. And, you know, Austin Statz, it was kind of a big question mark of, was he going to go to the NLL or was he going to go to the college route? So that was really kind of a late addition to this list. We had to kind of have plans to go, you know, without him in the list and with him in the list, depending on what he decided. Ultimately, he's going to OCC. You know, he's on the path to be a Division I lacrosse prospect. Yeah. You know, so we felt it was appropriate to include him in the list. And, you know, he's going to go to an OCC team that is looking to bounce back from its, you know, first time losing in I think it's 7 years. So expect a lot from him at the JUCO level. And then, you know, 2 years from now, you know, he's really going to be one of those game changers for, you know, one of those Northeast programs that, you know, if he matriculates to a 4-year college to play college lacrosse.
Exactly. I agree.
He was a guy I got to see. We did a box prospect day up in Rochester with the Nighthawks, and he was there, and he just did not come off the field, absolutely relentless on ground balls. A guy you definitely want to make sure you had your shoulder pads on for, because he was coming after you. But, you know, definitely someone who stood out there, and I agree, is going to be an interesting story moving forward.
Yeah, and I remember one play from the World Championships where, you know, he was playing for the Iroquois, and he basically just kind of leaned into his defender and just gradually pushed him all the way to the crease and just scored on the doorstep. I was like, that works. he's definitely a special talent, and I think, you know, he was a late addition, and I think we may have discounted him a little bit because of his uncertain status a little bit.
Excellent stuff, guys. Dan, congrats on getting the recruiting issue out the door. It's a huge project, and, you know, you were the biggest part of it from Inside the Cross's perspective. So we hope everyone enjoys the recruiting issue. Josh, thanks for all the work this summer and going into the fall with Inside the Cross's new series of events, including an invitational down here in Baltimore this fall. And we're going to talk to Hallie Quillen about the women's coverage in this year's recruiting issue.
We're joined now by Hallie Quillen, the editor of IL Women, who put together the women's content for the recruiting issue in conjunction with the rest of the IL staff. Hallie, the big thing with this recruiting issue is Kerrigan Miller, our number one incoming freshman, going to USC. There's a lot to love about her game. There's a reason she's the number one recruit in the nation and has been for the past few years. What is her impact going to be for the program over at USC?
I think her impact is going to be huge. At least that's what the coaching staff at USC is anticipating as well. She's really just a special type of player in that she impacts every element of the game. She is strong offensively, insane between the 30s, and very strong defensively as well. I'd say her strongest part of the game is the work that she does in between the 30s. She comes up with draw controls. She comes up with ground balls. She is constantly redefending, coming up with clock turnovers. And those are the plays that really build a team's momentum. And I'm really excited to see what she can do for a USC program that went 20-1 a season ago. And the Trojans were definitely the breakout team of last spring. I think that they're going to pick right up where they left off this year. And players like Kerrigan Miller will continue to elevate USC lacrosse.
She certainly is a special player. That's something that we saw at the IL Women Committed Division. You know, she was definitely a leader on that team. The thing that I was really, you know, stunned by, maybe stunned isn't the right word, but just so impressed by, was it seemed effortless for her. And she was on the offensive, defensive end. She seemed like she was everywhere, but it didn't ever seem like, you know, she was overly exerting herself because she's just such a smooth, you know, just great fit player. So it was really a joy to watch her at that event. When you got to see her up close for 3 days in a row, what stood out to you?
You know, I think that what stands out about her instantly, I mean, just like you mentioned, she's everywhere and she is so full of energy the way she approaches every play. you know, it looks effortless. I think just because she is so athletic, she's so fast, she makes it look easy. In fact, it's probably not too easy, you know, as a player, when you have a teammate that's racing down the sidelines in transition, causing turnovers, those are the plays that make you better and make you want to try harder. So I think that's her biggest impact. You know, her biggest impact is her ability to make plays spark her team, and they hold her teammates accountable. And, you know, just on a personal level, she's out there, she's cheering for her teammates. When her teammate scores a goal, she's the happiest on the field about it. So I think just a personality on a team that's going to be so special is she just seems like such a great teammate. And when you're a freshman and you're coming into a program that, you know, USC is an established program now. You know, they are no longer the new kid on the block, so to speak. You know, you're looking to work hard and find minutes on the field. And I think that that's really her mindset this fall. You know, she's not going in knowing that she's going to start or knowing that she's going to do this. You know, I talked to her when we were writing this feature and then throughout scheduling these photo shoots. And, you know, she told me, I'm just excited to go in and work hard. I'm excited to get better. I'm excited to learn from players like Michaela Michael in her last year. And I'm excited to work with the coaching staff there. I think that this coaching staff can make me the best player I could possibly be.
Yeah, we got to interact with her a lot that week for the committed division and throughout this process. And she's really a special person in addition to a special player. You know, there's so many decisions that go into this recruiting issue. You know, besides the rankings, which, you know, is a beast in itself, putting those together. But who's going to go on the cover? Who are we going to do photo shoots for? Where are we going to do these photo shoots? So many things that go into this issue. And for us, you know, I felt like it was a no-brainer to put Kerrigan on the cover. We haven't had a women's recruit as, you know, the predominant person on the cover of the recruiting issue ever. And, you know, it wasn't just us trying to make some sort of stance by putting on the cover. You know, I thought it was a no-brainer just because of, you know, her talent and her story is a special one as well. You know, our fellow scribe Christian Sweezy has he told me a nice kind of tip for writing a story. He says that, you know, every story shouldn't have one hook. It should have three hooks. Kerrigan Miller's story does. The first hook is she's just a special talent. She's such a great, talented player. And then the second is her going from Long Island to USC, you know, and just that's in itself shows the growth of the sport. And third is just the rise of USC. Like you said, it's an established program now. But her influence, you know, she can kind of take this program to an even greater height. And I think that's why it made such a compelling story for the cover of this issue. And then throw in there the fact that we get to get to the L.A. Coliseum. Our photo and production editor, Jacqueline Borowski, is from L.A. So she's been, you know, she was actually over there and able to go to the Coliseum and get an hour of Kerrigan's time inside the Coliseum for a great photo shoot. Everything just kind of came together perfectly for Kerrigan to be the cover star of this issue.
Yeah, and I think that that was something that was so exciting. You know, obviously, as a women's editor at Inside Lacrosse, whenever there's a female cover, it's something that I'm really excited about. I'm very passionate about. But for the 20th annual recruiting issue, which is, that's our most anticipated issue of the year, to have a female grace that cover, but also a player of the caliber of Kerrigan Miller, I was just so excited. I'm really happy with the issue that we put out, and I'm really happy with the women's content as a whole.
Yeah, this issue features more women's recruits than ever, more players featured across men's and women's. More than 500 players total are in this issue somewhere. You know, when we talk about the rest of the top tier of the women's incoming classes, you know, who's the next player that kind of really stands out for you that you're excited to see on the next level?
I'm excited to see Libby Colton. I'm really excited to see this Maryland class hit the field in College Park. They're our number one class, which I know we'll touch on later. Libby Colton, Brindy Griffin, Hannah Warther, all Maryland in-state players headed to the University of Maryland. I think we're going to see big things out of this freshman class as a whole, but really big things out of these three. Libby Colton was the Baltimore Sun Player of the Year, won a state championship with Manchester Valley. She was a player that she possesses that Katie Schwartzman-like game sense and speed, but she battled injury this year, and she was able to make the transition to attack predominantly this spring, and those are the roles she flourished in. So a year ago, 2 years ago, when she started to emerge on the recruiting radar, she was the type of player that I thought she was going to fit this Maryland midfield system like a glove. This past year, she really improved and embraced an entirely new part of her game, which was that offensive play. So I'm really excited. Is she going to be playing attack for Maryland? Is she going to be playing midfield? Can she play a hybrid role, a little bit of both? I'm really excited to see her play and excited to see classmates Wendy Griffin and Hannah Warther. Hannah Warther coming out of Century, she's a dominating midfielder. I actually think that she could play just strictly attack for Maryland. Once she decides to go to goal, she is very difficult to beat. Her size, her strength, and her speed really set her apart, and I think will set her apart at the college level. And Brendy Griffin, younger sister of Brooke Griffin, who was an All-American attacker at Maryland, currently on Team USA, plays a lot like Brooke in that she's that facilitator behind the crease. Never lost a high school game playing for McDonough, coming from a powerful program, joining the ranks, you know, as Taylor Cummings leaves, also a McDonough product, but she'll be joining the field with Megan Whittle, and I really can't wait to see what those three in particular can do. And I guess just throwing a wild card in, you know, our number three recruit in this class, Aisa Goldstock, headed to Syracuse. This is a Syracuse class that is heading in, much like Maryland, with a lot of clout, you know, simply because what Syracuse graduated. They lost Kayla Trainer, they lost Erica Boat, they lost Kelly Frost, Hallie Majorana. This freshman class will need to play right away, and Aisa Goldstock is one of the top goalies this class has. And she is the top goalie in this class, she's one of the top goalies the high school game has seen over the last few years.
Yeah, I was going to say, Aisa Goldstock, number three overall. That's pretty rare for a goalie to be that high in rankings like this. You know, they tend to skew towards, attack and midfield. But a goalie to be that high, what's so special about her?
She can clear the ball 60, 70 yards on a dime, threading the needle. She's just such a vocal player back there. She's a leader. She knows how to command the defense in front of her. I think that she really stood out throughout this recruiting process, and she's just gotten better and better. In the Under Armour game, she was lights out, and I thought that her ability to jump right in. And, you know, she transferred high school. She started at Niskanuna High School outside of Albany. She transferred to the New Hampton School in New Hampshire. And her ability to, during that transitional period, just jump right in for New Hampton and continue to evolve her game to emerge as the top goalie in New England, the top goalie in the Northeast, and ultimately the top goalie in the country, it just shows a lot about her work ethic. I'm really excited to see her headed to Syracuse. The goalie position is one that they definitely do need to fill. Allie Murray, who was a graduate student last year in goal for Syracuse, no longer between the pipes. So there's going to be a battle for a starting spot this year. I think Goldstock is leading that battle. And she reminds me of Liz Hogan, a fellow Syracuse goalie, and they have a very similar style of play. And Syracuse plays aggressive defense. They're going to have a goalie that sees a lot of shots. And I think Aisa is probably the best goalie to head to Syracuse since Hogan.
You know, you've talked about two of the great incoming classes, our number one and our number two, Maryland and Syracuse. When you look at this issue, we have seven Maryland girls photographed, you know, when we're doing our top 10 classes in the issue. That shows the depth and just talent from top to bottom that Maryland gets. What is Kathy Reese doing that she's just consistently able to reload here?
You know, I think that Kathy Reese really does a good job of keeping the best players the state of Maryland has to offer year in and year out in Maryland, bringing them to College Park. I think that she recruits so well from her backyard. And I think that, I mean, success breeds more success. When players look at the program that Kathy Reese and Lori Kenneth and Caitlin Phipps have built in College Park, they want to be a part of it because I think it's so apparent that Maryland is successful, but it's really apparent that they have fun while being successful. When you go to a Maryland practice, they're working 110% on everything, so there's a big smile on their face. There's a lot of energy. I like the positive culture that program has surrounding it. And I think that attracts a lot of these young high school players. This Maryland class, they have big shoes to fill. You know, I don't think anyone can fill the shoes of a Taylor Cummings and Alex Mercer. This was a small senior class, but very impactful. And I think that this freshman class coming in is one of the best classes that Maryland has seen in quite a long time. I'm really excited to see Colson, Griffin, and Warther, like I said earlier, but Nikki Fleewock, midfielder out of Wantagh, Long Island, she's headed down. She's a speedy midfielder. Victoria Linsalata, a defender out of New Jersey, plays a lot like Megan Dowdy. I'm really excited to see what she can do, if she can crack into that Maryland defensive lineup this year. Other players, Kelly Hartshorn, Natalie Miller. I think that this class has a lot of potential. Unlike a season ago, there's not much room to crack into Maryland's starting offense. You know, this past Maryland team, I think what a lot of people didn't realize, yes, they returned Taylor Cummings and Alice Mercer and Megan Whittle, but they graduated a lot of talent in Kelly McPartland, Megan Dowdy, Brooke Griffin, Erin Collins. You know, they had a lot of players that they needed to fill voids for, and there was a lot of room in Maryland's starting offense and midfield and defense in the 2016 season. And in the 2017 season, there's not a ton of room, but this is a very talented freshman class, so maybe they'll make waves. And I really think that the competition level in College Park is just as strong as it's been in previous national championship seasons this year.
One of the big things with fall ball, it's, you know, the first time to see how these freshmen kind of gel with the class that's already there, you know, see which freshmen come to campus kind of ready to hit the ground running and where they fit in these different teams. You know, when you look at some of these top classes, which ones do you think you'll see the most immediate impact?
You know, I think that you'll definitely see immediate impact from Syracuse's class. Unlike Maryland's class, where these Terps don't really have a ton of options to jump right in, Syracuse does. You know, they need to fill the void left by Kayla Trainer and Hallie Majorana. In the midfield, Erica Vogt and Kelly Frost are gone. Defensively, Brenna Renone. In goal, there's room. So there was talent waiting on the sideline, ready to contribute, because this was such a talent-heavy senior class a season ago for Syracuse. But this freshman class has the ability to make an immediate impact. I'm really excited to see what they can do. Beyond that, I love Northwestern's incomers. Northwestern has kind of had a youth invasion over the last couple years, really just starting with, you know, Selena Lasoda. She's going to be a junior. I can't wait to see what she can do for this young Northwestern team as they continue to get older and continue to get a bit more experience under their belt. I love Megan Duffy in this class. She's a talented midfielder out of upstate New York. Megan Kinna, she's their probably top incomer. She's a British Columbian midfielder, plays for Team Canada. Sarah Schinnell, an attacker out of Summit. I really like this Northwestern incoming freshman class. You know, 2 years ago, Northwestern brought in the number one class. This year, they're bringing in the number five class. The talent in Evanston is ready to get back to the top of the college ranks, ready to get back to the Final Four. And then, obviously, I'm really excited to see what USD can do. You know, what type of impact can Kerrigan Miller have? And I also really like Mary-Kate Condon and Kaylee Huff in this class. You know, Kerrigan Miller is one of the many talented players headed to Southern Cal this year, and I'm really looking forward to see what they have up their sleeve.
A lot of excitement with this freshman class coming in all across the country. This recruiting issue out the door, and it's going to be in newsstands and in people's doorsteps, you know, any day now. Hallie, this summer, you know, you saw 20 of events from Under Armour to the Committed Division to many others around around the recruiting circuit. What's one of your biggest takeaways to kind of send us off here?
You know, I love the Under Armour event. I think it's so well done. I love that senior game because you're able to see, you know, the future of college games on one field. And I really love the continuation of that. I really loved our Committed Division at the Iowa Women Invitational. There were four teams. I know we're going to expand on that next year. But, you know, we were able to watch the high school stars of yesterday and the college stars of tomorrow on one field for one final time before they went to college, which was a blast to cover. And I think that you and I, there were so many players that fit weren't Under Armour All-Americans, that that weren't really riding the recruiting wave that some others were at that time. And I know you and I spoke about it. We were a little surprised that some of those players weren't, because they weren't so strong. So I think that there's some sleepers in this class. Keep your eye out for Maddie McDaniel. Keep your eye out for Marissa DeVitro. I'm really excited about this freshman class, top to bottom. I think they're going to make impacts at every conference and at every position.
Excellent. Thanks, Hallie, for the time and for an excellent recruiting issue.
Thanks so much.